Welcome to Ring of Fire and Happy New Year, everyone. I am Farron Cousins, and man, do we have a show for you today. Obviously, we got to kick things off talking about all of the chaos that has taken place in just the last couple days on Capitol Hill, with Republicans fighting one another to figure out who in the hell is going to become the Speaker of the House. We're also going to talk about the problems facing Ronna McDaniel, the chair of the RNC, as a new poll shows that a majority of Republicans don't want her around anymore. We also have Donald Trump Jr. apparently taking a new job, which begs the question of who's left to actually run the Trump organization at this point. And because this is Human Trafficking Survivor Month, we will be joined by lawyer, activist, and co-chair of the Empower Her Network, Carissa Phelps, who's going to tell us about a new lawsuit against a popular hotel chain for completely ignoring the human trafficking that was taking place on their properties. All that and more is coming up. And don't forget, if you want the full show every week, go sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire 7 days of the week, go subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. So obviously, got to kick things off today talking about what has been happening in the House of Representatives. And before I get into that, just want to apologize really quick. If you notice, my voice might sound a little bit different. I have been battling a nasty sinus infection, so please bear with me. It's getting better, but my voice may not be 100% just yet. But either way, here we go, folks. As we all know, January 3rd was supposed to be the day that the new Congress came into the Capitol building, everybody gets sworn in after we elect the speaker, and then boom, right down to business, right? Well, that didn't happen. As we all know, Republicans just couldn't get their act together to figure out who was going to be Speaker of the House. Kevin McCarthy, of course, thought that he had this in the bag. He'd been talking to Republicans for weeks and weeks and weeks ever since the midterms, making deals, you know, talking to Marjorie Taylor Greene, giving her everything she's ever wanted. She was, I guess, supposed to help recruit some of these Republican holdouts that just a month ago, it appeared there were only five of them, right? You had Matt Gaetz and four other individuals, a gang of five, basically, led by Gaetz as the ringleader, who just adamantly objected to Kevin McCarthy becoming Speaker of the House, although at the time, they couldn't tell us why. And to be honest, that is still one of the biggest question marks of this past week, is why. None of these objectors, of which, by the way, it grew from 5 to 20, none of them have been able to properly articulate why they are so opposed to Kevin McCarthy becoming the Speaker of the House. It makes absolutely no sense. You know, Matt Gaetz came out this week once he swelled his ranks from 5 to about 20, as I said. He came out and he said, listen, if you want to drain the swamp, you can't have the biggest alligator in charge of the task. He then said, as a Florida man, he would know that. Okay, well, I'm also a Florida guy, and yeah, I mean, that's a fun metaphor, but it also means nothing. It means nothing. You have provided no material substance to tell anyone, anywhere, why you don't want Kevin McCarthy. Now, it could be because Matt Gaetz would prefer his friend Jim Jordan take that post, although Jim Jordan's kind of made it clear that he's not there, he's not ready for that yet. But Matt Gaetz would, I guess, prefer to have somebody he's super close with, somebody that he could likely manipulate in the role of the House Speaker, as opposed to Kevin McCarthy, who may not always be on Matt Gaetz' side. I mean, after all, Kevin McCarthy is an old guard in the Republican Party, been there for years and years and years. Matt Gaetz has only been there since 2016, so he's still relatively fresh compared to a lot of the people in that chamber. So he doesn't have the sway that he would like to have, right? Matt Gaetz has not yet amassed the power that he believes he should hold. So perhaps getting McCarthy out and putting somebody like Jim Jordan in there, or really anyone from the Freedom Caucus, might elevate Gates to that position that he believes he is rightfully entitled to after 6 short years in the House of Representatives. And keep in mind, he's only winning because he's in a deep red district where a Republican is always going to win. But it wasn't just Matt Gaetz this week. As we all know, obviously, Lauren Boebert came out. She also was doing media appearances. Couldn't articulate, of course, why she didn't want Kevin McCarthy to be the Speaker of the House. Maybe it's just because she likes Matt Gaetz, and if Matt Gaetz says do this, she's going to do it. Who knows, really? But she also opposed it. And then, of course, you had the other Republicans who were in full support of McCarthy. People like Dan Crenshaw. Crenshaw went on Fox News, blasted his former friends, Matt Gaetz, Lauren Boebert, everybody in the Freedom Caucus, said they were childish, said that this was absolutely ridiculous. You're making us all look like fools. Marjorie Taylor Greene came out, blasted Matt Gaetz specifically by name. The guy who, you know, a year and a half ago, she's on a summer tour with him across the country. They were joined at the hip. Greene and Gaetz were. That relationship has now gone sour, folks. It's kind of sad to see because Marjorie Taylor Greene, let's be honest, she doesn't have a lot of friends in Congress. And she managed to piss off the very few that she still has this week by calling them out. But she was right with the way she was calling them out, right? She went on to say, you know, these people are in it for themselves. They're out there trying to get all these concessions so that they get better positions. But then she lied and said, I haven't requested anything for myself. Well, actually, you did. I mean, we've been talking about that on Ring of Fire in our daily videos for 2 months now. How the reason you're supporting Kevin McCarthy is, of course, because you and him have been talking a lot, and he has agreed to let you investigate whatever you want. He's also pretty much promised you very nice positions on certain committees. So you don't get to go out there and act holier than thou when you're doing the exact same thing you're calling these other people out for doing. That's not how that works. That's how hypocrisy works, of course. But, you know, let's be honest here, Marjorie. You're no saint. You've done the exact same thing. Dan Crenshaw, as I mentioned, he later on accused these Republicans of only wanting attention. That's the reason they're doing this. This goes into more of his, you know, claim that they're being childish. They're throwing this temper tantrum so that people pay attention to them. They don't care about the ramifications. They don't care that the entire world right now is laughing at the Republican Party. And I think that's a very important thing to stress here. It's not just Americans saying that the Republican Party is dysfunctional. It's not international news, folks. Internationally, media outlets in Europe, in China, in the Middle East, in Russia, all pointing and laughing at the incompetency of these Republicans. And of course, it's driving them insane. But here's the big takeaway. All of this, you know, this big fight that we have had this week, what this proves to us is that those lunatics in that House Freedom Caucus, they are in charge. They will be the ones calling the shots. They have gotten all the concessions that they could ever hope for. They will be given those powerful committee assignments no matter what happens. And when that happens, they will be the ones in a position to decide which legislation gets brought to the floor. They will be the ones in the positions to decide which investigations move forward. And of course, as part of the other concessions, we're talking about them having the ability to defund specific aspects of the government, particularly the DOJ investigation into Donald Trump. So that's a terrifying thought. The Republicans have also announced plans that they're going to pass legislation to strip the IRS of the additional funding that they got from the Inflation Reduction Act last year. That's not too much of a concern because it would have to go through the Senate as well, and that ain't happening. But it is something they want to do. It's mostly performative, and they're going to try it. They're going to gut the Office of Congressional Ethics, the very same office that is in charge of investigating members of Congress when they may break the law. You know, they've pretty much already said, we're going to have to investigate George Santos. They've also announced that they're likely going to be investigating certain Republican lawmakers for their potential involvement in the events surrounding January 6th. So, of course, it makes sense that Republicans want to gut the Office of Congressional Ethics so that they can't investigate their own people. So I guess what I'm saying here is that all of this chaos that we have seen might be good for the country. I know it's bad for the Republican Party, and whatever's bad for the Republican Party by default is typically good for America. But had they all come and been sworn in on Tuesday, you know, Kevin McCarthy easily gets the speakership, they would get right down to business. And as I just explained, that business is very detrimental to the United States. It's not like these individuals, these new Republicans in the majority, were going to come out there and say, okay, we're all sworn in now. Let's work on increasing the minimum wage. Let's work on this Green New Deal, right? No, they're not going to do things like that. In addition to, you know, trying to gut the IRS and gut the Office of Congressional Ethics, the other thing that's top priority on their agenda is making the 2017 Trump tax cuts permanent. Because that is literally the only thing Republicans know how to do is cut taxes. And as we all know, as the public knows, those tax cuts only benefited the people at the top and, of course, corporations in this country. So as long as that chaos was happening, we weren't getting this horrible legislation. We weren't getting these awful gifts that Republicans are about to, you know, force upon the country. We don't want these things. But they're going to do everything in their power to force us to accept them. And then, of course, the investigations, right? That's another big part of it. They want to investigate. I mean, look, Ronna McDaniel, 2 weeks ago, was asked in an interview, hey, you know, Republican, this is before the chaos. Hey, Republicans are coming in. You know, what's your top priority? And she literally said the top priority, the biggest question we have to answer is Hunter Biden's laptop. That was her answer. The biggest issue facing America. Now, these are the Republicans who ran on tackling inflation, tackling the supply chain crisis, you know, getting to the bottom of everything that's happening with our foreign policy from Ukraine to Afghanistan. We're gonna do all of this. We're going to help Americans. And then once they've secured the victory, what are you going to do? We're going after Hunter Biden's laptop. That was her answer. And that's a good place to go ahead and pivot to our next topic here. Ronna McDaniel, right? As chaotic as things have been in the House of Representatives this past week, Ronna McDaniel, as the chair of the RNC, is facing her own problems. She is up for re-election, and she's got some challengers, one of them being Mike Lindell. I'll get more to him in a minute because he said some possibly defamatory things about Ronna McDaniel recently. But a poll obtained exclusively by The Hill shows that 73% of Republican voters do not want Ronna McDaniel to head up the RNC anymore. We're talking about almost three quarters of the Republican Party looking at Ronna McDaniel, looking at the fact that she has been a stellar failure ever since she came to power in 2017. She's lost pretty much every election since then. And I know they did technically win the House in the midterms. They thought they'd win it by 70 seats. They didn't. So that's really not that much of a victory. Plus, they lost the Senate again. So she is a serial loser. She's never won. She's never won. And that kind of a losing record catches up to you, right? That's what 73% of Republican voters out there are saying right now. Like, listen, we're sick and tired of losing. And Ronna, you have been at the head of this. ever since all of the losing began, because Trump picked her. And I think that's also important to remember. Trump picked Ronna McDaniel after he won the 2016 election, thanks to the Electoral College. And ever since then, what happened? Well, we had the big blue wave in 2018. We had Democrats retake the Senate and win the White House in 2020. And then, as I mentioned, 2022, Republicans got the House. They had a horrifying showing in the midterms. They thought they were going to win by 70 seats was their original prediction. They won by, what, 10? Yeah, that's not impressive. That's actually really, really bad. So she is a loser. And according, by the way, to MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, not only is she a loser, but apparently there's a chance she's a criminal too. Now, I'll be honest, I don't believe that. I don't believe for a second that Ronna McDaniel is a criminal, but I'm going to read to you what MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell said recently in an interview. And it's important because Lindell is technically running against Ronna to take over the RNC. So here is what Mike Lindell had to say. This is to Steve Bannon. There are so many problems, Steve. I've spent the last 3 weeks doing due diligence within the RNC. Just the money itself that it costs, 40 cents for every dollar that you go out and get from big donors, goes to these things, one of them called Data Trust. To me, it's like a big money laundering operation. Don't quote me on that. We're still digging. This is disgusting, the wasted, frivolous money that goes down the drain. The big donors, they deserve better. We deserve some return on our investment. I used to give a lot of money to the RNC. I won't do it, and neither will the big donors in its current condition, and it needs new leadership. You just compared the entire Republican Party to a money laundering operation. Then you're like, well, don't quote me on that, because, you know, you don't want to get sued for defamation. But then you said, but we're still digging. So it's clear from his comments there that Lindell thinks this there could be money laundering taking place, right? Because that's totally a thing that would go unnoticed. I mean, listen, we've actually seen bigger organizations do it in the past, but come on, man. Do you not know? Like, are you that stupid that you don't know how political parties and the campaign apparatus work? Because, yeah, there's a lot of people skimming off the top. You know, the WinRed, the as you say, the Data Trust, all these groups that these groups use, the political parties use, they take their fee. You know, you're using our apparatus to send out these mass emails. That's going to cost you because we're a business and we have to pay for our services. That's how it works, idiots. The group's doing the fundraising, processing the money itself. That's WinRed. Yeah, they get to charge fees for that because they're doing all the legwork. All the party has to do is sit back and wait for the money to be deposited into their accounts. That's not money laundering. That's just how businesses work, Mike. You run a business. How do you not know this? Vendors charge money for their services. That is not money laundering. That is, in fact, just plain old capitalism. And I would think of all people, you would know that. And here's the fun part. You do. You do know that, Mike. But you're trying to paint Ronna McDaniel as some kind of, you know, possible criminal engaging in money laundering because you want to beat her. You want to run the Republican Party. You want to wear the big hat. But you know nothing. You know nothing of how a party works. Now, having said that, and what I said earlier about Ronna being a serial loser, the Republicans do have a problem. And it's a problem they've got to figure out. And the bigger problem is their approach to the problem, because the approach to the problem is you either stick with Ronna McDaniel, who clearly sucks at her job, or you replace her with some of these other freaks that are running to unseat her, which, by the way, includes some people who lost their elections. So you get rid of one loser, but then you end up replacing her with even bigger losers. Because apparently that's all the Republican Party has to offer. Losers and conspiracy theorists vying to control one of the two major parties here in the United States. It's a sad state of affairs for the Republican Party, no matter where you look in the Republican Party. On that note, too, it's worthwhile to bring up the fact that you've got Senator Rick Scott, Republican Senator Rick Scott, who's running a seven-figure ad campaign across the country, multi-million dollars he's spending, running ads attacking Mitch McConnell. So you've got Republicans going after Republicans in the Senate, Republicans going after Republicans in the House, Republicans going after Republicans at the actual RNC. It is an all-out brawl because these people are so incompetent. They're so incapable of actually governing. They can't even get their ducks in a row. But again, the more chaos there is within that Republican Party, the better it is for the Democrats. You know, we gotta take a win when we can get it. And sometimes that win is when we just sit back, look at them, expose the hypocrisy and the stupidity, and laugh about it all day long. That's the best thing we can do right now. And speaking of losers within the Republican Party, gotta talk for a minute about Carrie Lake. Since the last time we did a new show here at Ring of Fire, you know, we took the holidays off. Last time, Carrie Lake, Christmas Eve, had her lawsuit dismissed, her election challenge lawsuit in the state of Arizona, claiming that, by God, I am still going to be the governor, was dismissed on Christmas Eve. It was a Saturday. I'm sorry, but to me, that's just remarkable, right? Courts typically don't do things on Saturdays. Sure as hell don't do things on Christmas Eve, but the judge felt it so important to go ahead and get this out there that he dismissed it on Christmas Eve. Here's what happened in that particular lawsuit. Carrie Lake had filed the lawsuit. She had 10 claims in the suit, alleging voter fraud, you know, other shenanigans, I guess we could call them, in the state of Arizona in the 2022 gubernatorial race. Before they even got to court, ever, the judge dismissed 8 of the 10 claims that she had made, leaving only 2 claims left. And both of those claims were related to the misprinted ballots in Maricopa County. Now, in case you're not familiar with that, just a quick refresher. Maricopa County did run into some issues. Apparently, the ink used on those ballots that were printed was too light and couldn't be read by the machines. So voters were given an option. You can either fill it out on the light ballot. It will be counted by hand. You put it over here, we'll do it. You can come back later and, you know, we'll have new ballots so you can just come back. Or you can instead fill out one of these, I guess you'd call it a provisional ballot, and it'll be the same thing. So they had workarounds. But in her lawsuit, Carrie Lake accused the county of doing this intentionally. And the judge didn't outright dismiss those claims. He said, all right, come into my court, prove to me that this happened. So Carrie Lake and her legal team go to court and they're like, all right, here's our chance to show you this happened. And they couldn't provide any evidence. Not a single piece of evidence to suggest that this misprinting of the ballots was somehow malicious. So, after a couple days of arguments, the judge said on Christmas Eve, you know what? Nope. I'm not going to let this fly. I'm done. Dismissed it. Gone. Not long after, of course, Carrie Lake filed notice of appeal, and she has now officially appealed it. And this week, the appellate court set a tentative date of January 24th, where Carrie Lake and her legal team, who, by the way, have been sanctioned by the lower court and by the state for filing this frivolous and fictitious lawsuit. January 24th, y'all come in, talk to this three-judge panel, you talk to them, and we'll go from there. But here's the problem Carrie Lake has. 2 days before the appellate court set that January 24th date, which again is still only tentative, 2 days prior to that, Katie Hobbs was sworn in as the governor of Arizona. Which means it's done. Like, there's literally nothing Carrie Lake could do. There's nothing, as far as we know, that the courts could do to overturn those election results. That is uncharted territory, and there is no legal mechanism to throw it out, right? That doesn't exist in U.S. law. So Carrie Lake is going to get her appeal. She's going to go to court. She's going to make these same stupid arguments that she made in the lower court. And we're going to see the same result. And then she's going to appeal that too. And we'll see the same thing happen again. Carrie Lake knows she's going to lose. She knows, by the way, that she could face even more sanctions in addition to the $33,000 sanction she's already received by continuing to appeal this frivolous lawsuit. But there is a very clear reason why she is doing this, and it has nothing to do with actually overturning those election results. The reason Carrie Lake continues to appeal this, continues to fight it. Hell, in an interview this past week, she introduced herself as the rightful governor of Arizona. The reason she does that is because the second she gives up fighting, she's out of the headlines. She's gone. She doesn't exist in the eyes of the public anymore. And the one thing more terrifying for Republicans than losing an election is losing relevancy. And that thought terrifies Carrie Lake, who has spent her entire adult career in the spotlight, right? She was a news reporter. You're in the spotlight. You're literally in a spotlight as a news reporter. Then she runs for governor. She's been hanging out at Mar-a-Lago. She's been doing all these things, but all that's starting to die down a little bit. So if she didn't appeal this, there'd be no reason for anybody to talk to her or about her anymore. She would fade into obscurity, and that is the most terrifying thought to her. And while I was thinking about that a couple days ago, it dawned on me, that's the same thing that happened to Donald Trump. Had Donald Trump not continued his crusade against the 2020 election after he left office, he would have faded into obscurity to a degree, probably not the same degree that Carrie Lake will. But think about that for just a moment. Donald Trump was kicked off Facebook, kicked off Twitter. Truth Social didn't yet exist. So how did he stay in the headlines? You know, this was prior to the year 2022. He stayed in the headlines by issuing those ridiculous proclamations from the 45th president in his office at Mar-a-Lago, by repeatedly claiming that the 2020 election was stolen. He was still going out there and giving media appearances. He was still doing rallies. And every time, the same dull talking points. The election was stolen, the election was stolen, the election was stolen. If it weren't for him saying that, nobody would have shown up at these rallies because he had nothing else to say. But by keeping that issue alive, he kept his relevancy alive. And Carrie Lake saw that. I mean, she is a protege of Donald Trump. Again, that's why she spent so much time at Mar-a-Lago recently. It worked for Trump. It is not going to work for Carrie Lake. Because unlike Trump, nobody cared who Carrie Lake was before she lost her election. And nobody cares about her after. Trump was actually an important person. I know we don't want to acknowledge that, but it's true. He was important. He was important in the business world. He was important in the entertainment world. And of course, then he became president of the United States. Carrie Lake doesn't have that kind of resume, right? She has nothing to really fall back on. As far as we know, Fox News, Newsmax, none of those conservative outlets have come knocking on her door saying, let's sign a contract. So if she fades into obscurity, it's back to local news reporting for Carrie Lake. And that scares her more than anything else. And you know what? While we're talking about Trump proteges, I got to mention briefly Hope Hicks. Because we got more documents out this week from the January 6th Select Committee, which of course no longer exists. But Hope Hicks, who was a longtime aide of Donald Trump, reportedly had a text, not reportedly, it did happen. She had a text message exchange with a woman by the name of Julie Radford, who was then at the time the chief of staff to Ivanka Trump. And this text message exchange, which I'm about to read to you, took place right after the Capitol riot. Here is what Hope Hicks said. In one day, he, meaning Trump, ended every future opportunity that doesn't include speaking engagements at the local Proud Boys chapter. Radford responded, "Yup." Then Hope Hicks added, "And all of us that didn't have jobs lined up will be perpetually unemployed. I'm so mad and upset. We all look like domestic terrorists now." Radford responded, "Oh yes, I've been crying for an hour." So Hope Hicks, Julie Radford, again, she was chief of staff to Ivanka Trump on that day. They're looking at what's happening out there in the country. They're looking at what's happened at the Capitol. People storming it, people being killed, police officers being beaten mercilessly with Trump flags. And they said, "Oh my God, my job prospects." That's what went through their selfish little brains. It didn't matter that democracy itself was being attacked. It didn't matter that the Capitol was under siege. These selfish, horrible little goblins, all they could think about was, "Oh no, I'm never going to get a job again." As if you were going to get a job anywhere ever again, ever. Here's what I love about this story. It shows how stupid these two individuals are, by the way. Throughout the Trump administration, report after report came out, and I know because I talked about every single one of them on the Ring of Fire YouTube channel when they came out, of Trump staffers in the White House wanting to leave but being unable to because nobody would hire them because they worked in the Trump administration. And here's why that happened, and here's why Hope Hicks and Julie Radford probably weren't going to get a real job anywhere to begin with. The Trump administration, that presidential administration, was not like any others. So the people that worked there weren't getting real experience, right? It's not the same kind of experience you would have had under Barack Obama or, hell, even under a George W. Bush, because things didn't work right in the Trump administration. So the experience you're getting, yes, it's on-the-job experience, but it's in doing things wrong. So when you put that on your resume and you go to companies like Visa, who Radford said she was, you know, going to interview with and they canceled it, they're looking at that and they're like, "Yeah, okay, maybe you did work at a bank, but you kept screwing up while you were at the bank. Just because you have experience doesn't mean that you're valuable to us." And again, this happened repeatedly with members of the Trump administration, big and small. Sean Spicer, it took him years after he left the Trump administration to finally be hireable again. And the only place he could find that would hire him is Newsmax. Right? He wanted to get a job at Fox News. He wanted to get a job at CNN. That's what the reports had said. And nobody would touch him because he was so toxic from working in the Trump administration. And if Hope Hicks and Julie Radford had been paying attention to that, they could have bailed out years ago. They could have said, "Listen, you're not going to be president forever, no matter what you think. I'm going to have to move on. I'm still young. I've got my whole life ahead of me. I need to get out of here before I completely diminish my job prospects." Again, long before the Capitol riot. But they didn't. They made the decision to stay. And because you made that decision, you have to deal with the consequences. And the consequences may mean you never get that high-paying, glamorous job that you've always wanted. But you have nobody to blame for that other than yourself, because you chose to stay by Donald Trump's side, by Ivanka Trump's side, because you thought in the end it would help you, and you found out the hard way that it wasn't going to do that. And of course, while we're talking about Donald Trump, I know there's just so much news to cover today, folks. But while we're talking about Trump, let's go ahead and talk about his third presidential bid that, in case you forgot, is still a thing. I know he's not out there giving speeches. He's not doing rallies. He's really not doing much of anything. But he is technically on paper running for president again. And this past week, one of his insiders spoke on the condition of anonymity to The Guardian. This is somebody close to Trump working for him now. And they said this: about Donald Trump's third presidential campaign. Trump has no political skills left. His team is a joke. The ship is sinking. Here is what conservative writer Matt Lewis, who writes for the Daily Beast, told Morning Joe this week. I don't have to tell you, this has been a long time coming, and I went back and looked at Donald Trump's year. 2022 was a horrible year, not just because of the midterms. It started off with a rally in Arizona that was horrible. That didn't live up to expectations. He seemed off of his game. Then he praised Vladimir Putin's brilliance, you know, genius for going into Ukraine. What I am suggesting is human nature. I think people have finally gotten bored with him. I think we have short attention spans, and I think he's gotten older, and I think he's being supplanted. He's being supplanted by someone on the right. Ron DeSantis, I think. That's the question. Does DeSantis run? But I also think Donald Trump is being supplanted in the, you know, what I call the attention economy. It's not just Ron DeSantis in the political realm. It's also people like Elon Musk, who I think are taking up the Twitter oxygen that Donald Trump used to receive. It was a terrible year for Trump in 2022. Maybe he rebounds, but for the first time, I think he's starting to look old, and not just in age, but old news. Again, that was from a conservative columnist for the Daily Beast by the name of Matt Lewis. Add that to what that Trump insider said. You know, the ship is sinking. His team is a joke. Conservative writer saying he's old news. Meanwhile, Trump's out there on Truth Social begging people to buy his lie that the midterm failures weren't my fault. He said that on Truth Social this week. He said, quote, "It wasn't my fault that the Republicans didn't live up to expectations in the midterms." He instead somehow blamed Mitch McConnell and his wife for that and once again launched into a racist attack on Elaine Chao. But the ship is sinking and Trump is old news. I agree with all of those statements. And I know there's plenty of writers on the left, people who, by the way, are much smarter than me. I will give them full credit for that, who say, don't write him off just yet. And listen, I'm not writing Trump off. What I am saying is that the Trump of 2022 does not have the magic of Trump in 2020, who didn't even have the magic of Trump in 2016. 2016 for Trump was lightning in a bottle. He couldn't recapture that in 2020, no matter how hard he tried. COVID ended that for him. And now that we're in 2023, after watching Trump get his butt handed to him in the midterms with the people he picked, it ain't there. He's not going out. You know, another Trump insider in another interview this week said all he's doing is playing golf. He's just playing golf. And he's ranting on Truth Social. His heart is not in it, they said. It's almost as if Trump doesn't even want to be running again. He just has to do it because everybody expected him to do it. He thinks the people want him to do it. However, polls show that most Republicans do not want him to do it. They would rather have somebody new. Ron DeSantis is beating him in all the polls. Trump is yesterday's news. Trumpism, on the other hand, is resurgent. And that, of course, circles back to the first thing we talked about today, the chaos in the House of Representatives. That chaos is being caused by the Trump wing of the party, the House Freedom Caucus. They're all loyal Trumpists, even though they didn't listen to him when he said, fall in line and vote for McCarthy. They're still little bitty Trumps. So Trump himself might end up being defeated. But what he turned the Republican Party into is not being defeated. And I think that's where the disconnect comes from, why you have some of these writers saying like, hey, don't write off Trump because of all these people. Nobody's saying that Trumpism is being defeated. All we're saying is the guy that created it ain't looking so hot right now. And as it stands right now, I do not see a way that he wiggles himself out of this. And finally, in news, this one a little bit more fun. Apparently, Donald Trump Jr. has found a new job. It was announced this week that Donald Trump Jr. signed a seven-figure deal, multi-million-dollar deal, with the conservative platform called Rumble. If you're not familiar with that, it is a right-wing platform that tries to be the alternative to YouTube. It's, you know, been bailed out by investors. It's got a lot of money behind it. You got Republican billionaires supporting it. And they said, you know what? We love all these ranting and raving videos that Donald Trump Jr. puts out on social media. What if we turned it into a podcast? And his podcast is going to be called Triggered with Don Jr. And he's now a podcaster. As if there's not already a million of us out there to begin with, Donald Trump Jr. is now throwing his name out there as a podcaster. But the day before that news was announced, something weird happened. And that weird thing was that Donald Trump put out one of his, you know, frantic hand-waving videos looking like a coked-out weirdo. But he did a video where he promoted what he called a We the People Bible, telling people to go buy the We the People Bible and help return America to its Judeo-Christian roots, as if Donald Trump Jr. knows anything about Christianity or really anything about anything in the Bible. But nevertheless, he was out there hawking Bibles. The next day, he announces he's going to be a podcast host. What has happened to this guy? But more importantly, who the hell's running the Trump Organization? Right? We know Donald Trump Sr. is not running it. He's playing golf and hanging out at Mar-a-Lago, watching TV and posting on Truth Social, you know, pretending to run for president. So Don Sr. is not doing it. Donald Trump Jr. is more interested in becoming a media personality and a Bible salesman. So does that mean the whole organization is now being run by the little idiot Eric? Because if so, that's probably not going to last very long, as Eric is, in my opinion, the dumbest of the Trump kids. You'd be better off giving it to Barron, and I don't even think he's graduated from high school yet. But that's the career path Don Jr. wants. Maybe he's trying to run the company on the side, who knows, but trust me, doing podcasts may seem easy, folks. Takes a lot of work. I don't think Donald Trump Jr. is ready for that. But I guess if you're getting paid a couple $1 million to do it, you'll find a way. And that's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But remember, if you want the full show every week, go sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.